right, the book of 2 Peter, and in a few moments I'll give you what verses that we're going to read, but I want to introduce it this way. I want tonight to be the end of this series that I've done on justice and what justice looks like and why we need to understand God's definition of justice. And we've learned several things. We've learned that justice is really the execution of God's what? What's the big word, the big category? Goodness. Well, it's of his goodness, right? And part of his goodness is his righteousness. So his righteousness is good. The execution of his righteousness is what is defined as God being just. And so we looked at that both in definition, and we looked at it from a scriptural perspective. We looked at it as applying to our culture situation on Sunday morning. And then on Sunday afternoon, we looked at God's justice as being supremely executed where? At the cross, right? At Calvary, in the death, burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. What I want to do this evening is I want to answer this question. If you are a righteous person, that is, you're born again, you are genuinely converted, you have received the imputation of the righteousness of Christ, and now you are outworking that righteousness in your walk, in your behavior, and you are counted as a righteous person, not just in position, but also in behavior. Not a perfect person, right? But as a righteous person. And you are living in a culture that is unrighteous. Okay, that sounds like today, right? Sounds like every generation that has occurred since the days of Adam. And so what would be going on inside a righteous person's soul in an unrighteous culture or an unjust culture? In other words, what would happen to your spirit, right? You're living in this culture, are we not? We're not of the world, but we are in the what? We are in the world. Here you are, as a righteous man, attempting to walk with honorable behavior. What would happen to your spirit as you are immersed in a world, in a culture that is growing more and more ungodly and more unrighteous week by week, right? What would be going on? What would you expect to be going on? Let me tell you two things that you should not expect to be doing. First of all, there should be nothing inside of you that says, I want to join in with all this, right? You're living in a what kind of culture? Ungodly. You're living in an unrighteous culture. Should there be anything predominantly inside of a saved person that says, I'd like to join in with that? The answer is no, right? That's been broken. I'm not saying there's never any pull, but the majority of what is going on in your soul is, no, you should not want to join it. There are those who say they're Christians and they want to join it. Second thing that should not be happening is you should not desire to modify New Testament Christianity to accommodate the culture. Does that make sense? If the culture is ungodly and the culture is unrighteous, well, you can either join it, okay? No, don't do that. But the other option you might try to do is modify your thinking about what New Testament Christianity is so that the New Testament is not so sharply opposed to it. And so we have churches today that, you know, they may not join, as it were, and become a homosexual, but they're more than willing to what? Well, they're more than willing to accommodate it, and they will even try to use the Bible to say, well, you know, this is love, and it's loving relationship, and, you know, all this type of stuff. No, we should not want to modify what the Bible has to say about this. Can we all agree about that? Okay. So those two things should not be going on in your soul. How do you think Jesus' soul responded in his ungodly culture? What do you think Abraham would have experienced in his ungodly culture? What about Daniel?
I didn't get that. Could you try again?
What about Daniel? Ungodly culture.
There's no one in your contacts matching Daniel.
Thank you, Siri. How would they be feeling? Did Daniel have any types of feelings, any type of emotions in his soul that he would have had to deal with? What do you think? Well, folks, when we talk about what's going on inside a righteous man in an unrighteous, unjust, ungodly culture, we are given an example of such a man. And we are told in the Bible what was going on in his soul. Very interesting. I bet you would never have picked this man. You're here in 1 Peter, or did I say 2nd? Which one? 2nd Peter, that's where I want you. 2nd Peter chapter 2. And I want us to begin reading in verse 4. I'm going to read down through verse 10. And you'll see the example that God uses. For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to pits of darkness reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness, with seven others, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly, and if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter, and if he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment, and especially those who indulge the flesh in its corrupt desires and despise authority. Can everybody see that? What man did God give as an example to teach us what goes on inside a person? What's his name? His name is Lot. Would you have picked him? He's given as the example of what goes on inside a heart of Daniel, or soul of Abraham, or your soul, or my soul, in living in the midst of an ungodly, unrighteous culture. And that's what I want to just briefly point out to you here this evening. I want you to note contrast here. I want you to note in verse 4 the phrase, God did not spare. Everybody see that? The phrase means God did not save from loss these angels. God did not spare. Look down at verse 5. And did not spare the ancient world. Everybody see that? He did not spare it from losing it, but he did, look at verse 6, he condemned. Everybody see the verb there? He condemned. That term means that God examined the evidence and pronounced a sentence of guilt and condemnation upon that those cities. Everybody see that? So on one, you got God did not spare. God did not spare, but God did condemn. And what we find is this: God actually keeps people under condemnation. Look down at verse 9. Then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to what? The unrighteous. To keep them under punishment for the day of judgment. That would be a most terrible pronouncement, would it not? So God knows how to keep, to reserve angels that sinned. He knew how to preserve that ancient world unto condemnation. He knew how to preserve the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and the surrounding towns. And he kept them unto judgment because of their behavior. Why? They were unrighteous. Look at verse 9. To keep the unrighteous under punishment. Everybody see that? That's our term that we have been looking at. In contrast to that, look at verse 5. He did not spare the ancient world, but what did he do for Noah? What's the term? He preserved. Everybody see verse 5 in chapter 2? He preserved Noah. He kept Noah. What else did he do? Well, he rescued Noah, didn't he? And not only did he do that for Noah, he did that for Lot. Look at verse 7. And he rescued Lot. What was his characterization? What does it say? He's what? Everybody with me? Everybody there? Nod your head if you're there. Okay. He's righteous, isn't he? I bet if all you had was Genesis, you would not have come to that conclusion. So did God rescue Noah? Did God rescue Lot? And he says in verse 9 that he rescues the godly. So what does that tell you about Noah? What does that tell you about Lot? It might ruin some sermons, but you know, that's what the text is saying. And he calls them righteous. He says in verse 7, he rescued righteous Lot. He rescued Noah. We gather he's righteous because he's a preacher of righteousness, right? And so you see the contrast there. God did not spare, but God did rescue. What's the contrast? Unrighteous people versus what kind of people? Righteous people. And so that's the text that we're coming to. And folks, Lot, the interesting thing about Lot is that the Lord, through Peter, gives us an insight into his soul. Not just his outward behavior, but into his soul. Now, I got 5 points here. Number one, Lot is placed on the same level as Noah. Everybody see that? They're both righteous. They're both godly. And I would gather that both of them felt in their soul what Lot felt. If I would word it in 1 Peter terminology, they are experiencing in their soul certain motions and feelings because they're having honorable behavior. Another thing I want us to see here in verses 4 through 10, secondly, is this. Well, God is dealing with them on an individual level. Now, their obedience has effect upon their families, or a lack of effect upon their families. But God is dealing with them individually, right? He said, Noah. That's not two people, that's how many people? That's one person. He said, Lot. That's not two lots or three lots, that's one person. And folks, God does deal with corporate peoples, but in general, when you look at this type of punishment or retribution of God acting justly, He's dealing with you individually. If I was Lot and I'm living in Sodom, and you're just going to deal with the whole entity, then Lot should have been destroyed. Because he's in the city of Sodom, right? But Lot is an individual, a righteous man. Did God rescue him? Yes, He did. Folks, just jumping ahead a little bit, that's our great hope. That no matter how bad the culture gets, God can preserve us. That's the point of the passage. Noah did take seven of his family with him into the ark. Lot took out only his wife and two daughters, and his wife did not make it. But it's still a righteous Noah and a righteous Lot, right? Now, what was going on in their soul? I would word it with two verbs. The first verb was this. When a righteous man lives in an unrighteous culture, what happens to him, verse 8, is his, what kind of soul? His righteous soul tormented. Everybody see that word? His soul is tormented. Now, this word is a very interesting word. The word fundamentally means to be tortured. All right, now let me ask you a question without giving detail. What do you think it would feel like to be tortured? That's what's going on in his soul while he's living in the area of Sodom and Gomorrah. But folks, this Greek term is translated torment is used in connection with the second death. Fire and brimstone type of suffering. So let me ask you this. There's no way we can comprehend this, but what type of suffering do you think people will experience in eternity in the lake of fire and brimstone? How much torment do you think that would feel like? Well, there was external torment, worms, and internal torment, right? Excuse me, worms internal, fire external. Would you say that would be painful? Can we all agree it would be painful? Okay, that's what's going on inside Lot's soul. His soul is tortured. Look at the verse again. Verse 8. He felt his righteous soul tormented when? Every day. It wasn't a periodic thing. It was every day. Day after day after day after day. He's feeling this fire, brimstone, Gehenna type of pain in his soul. And it says in verse 8, what caused him such torture? Folks, what in the culture really caused him torture in his soul? their lawlessness. Everybody see that? All right. This message came about because several weeks ago, as I was watching all this mob behavior, I was really upset about it. In fact, I was so upset about it, I spent time praying about it. What was I upset about? I was upset about their lawlessness. In other words, if we had put it in another Old Testament framework, they were doing what was right in their own eyes. Right? And our authorities were allowing it because they were doing what was right in their eyes. We have families today that are doing what is right in their eyes. They are, and you need to really get this word underneath your belt, they are lawless. They are without law to themselves. This term lawless is a term that is used to describe the Antichrist. So that lets you know what he thinks about everybody else's law. The term is also used with the two thieves that were on each side of our Lord at Calvary. They broke the law, right? So, number one, my question is, what's going on inside of a righteous man in the midst of an ungodly culture? Number one, his soul is tortured about this. Everybody with me? Okay. Number two, his soul is oppressed. Look at verse 7. And he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed. Oppressed by what? Verse 8. What he saw and heard. He's oppressed by what he saw and heard. It involved his eyes and it involved his ears. The word oppress means that whatever is happening through his ears and what his eyes are looking upon calls within Lot a conscience, a constant distress of soul. Some of the words that are used are these, pain, sorrow. You feel this? Anxiety. You feel that when you look at it? If you watch the news and you watch what's going on, do you say hip hip hooray, or is there something inside of you that is kind of apprehensive about the whole thing? And this distress came on his soul forcefully. Through what gates? His ears and his eyes. And folks, let me ask you this question. Is this going on in your soul right now as you listen to what's going on in our culture? Is this what's going on in your soul as you see what's going on in our culture? What has come into your life that you had no choice but to see and no choice but to hear, but it came and it caused you distress in your soul? Because folks, that's what's been going on in my soul these past several weeks. This is what goes on in my soul when I read what's going on in the federal government. What's going on? I feel distress on me. I feel pain. I feel tormented inside. You got to deal with it, right? This is a righteous man's response. You can't say, well, I shouldn't be feeling this way. I mean, if I really loved them, I wouldn't feel this way. No, this is how love feels. Folks, when you look at what's going on, you don't say hip hip hooray. It causes you distress and torment and anguish and sorrow and pain. Now, what was causing, what was coming to him through the eye gate and the ear gate? Five things will be done quickly. Number one, verse 7. Sensual conduct. That refers to a self-abandonment to your feelings. Whatever your feelings say, that's what I'm going to what? That's what I'm going to do. I mean, if my feelings change to my wife and I have positive feelings to another woman, then I'm just going to connect up with her. That's how I feel. It's just a self-abandonment to your feelings. Any of that going on outside in the culture? He heard it and saw it. And it's not because he decided to join it. It's not because he wanted to watch it on television. Folks, if your soul is tortured, tormented, full of anxiety, and full of distress, you're not watching that hour television program. You're not listening to it on your internet or on the radio or however you're getting it through the ears. Now, it's one thing if it comes upon you involuntarily. It's totally another one if you voluntarily put yourself in its pathway. What else is coming? Well, there's two words here that are given, and it's the word in verse 7, unprincipled, and in verse 8, the word lawless. Those two words are very, very closely related. And I'm not sure my definition of this is right, but this is what I wrote down after just doing a preliminary look at these two Greek terms. It seems like one of those terms, the person is acting as if there is no law. He's lawless, right? But the second term seems to mean that they are deliberately acting contrary to the law. In other words, it's not just I'm lawless and I'm acting that way. It's that I am antagonistic. I'm against the law. Any of that going on today? Fourthly, depending on how you're doing this, verse 10, they indulge the flesh in its corrupt desires. Brother, you really ought to meditate on that. They are moving in the direction of what their flesh, their corruptible flesh, is communicating to them through their feelings. In other words, folks, and I've said this before, and I really do this myself, my feelings and the emotions that go on, they are suspect always. They are to be set up within the boundaries of God's word and judged. Lastly, in verse 10, They despise authority. Any of that going on out there? The word despise means to look down on or to treat with contempt and scorn. And folks, when you see the phrase defund the police, you ought to think despising authority. Everybody with me on this? This is what's going on. And folks, that despising the authority, Lot heard it and saw it. The indulging of the corrupt flesh, he heard about it and saw it. Lawlessness, he heard about it and saw it. Unprincipled men, he heard about it and saw it. Sensual conduct, he heard about it and saw it. Every day he lived with this. And every day you have to live with this, don't you? And it's getting worse. Folks, this is, you can judge yourself. If you're experiencing this in your soul, thanks be to God. This isn't a bad thing, it's a good thing. Right? We say, well, I don't want to feel that way. No, you do want to feel this way. And folks, the worst thing that could happen to you, the very worst thing that could happen to you is that you lose the distress and torment of soul by what you see and hear. You lose it, it means this, you are desensitized to it. You lose that and become numb to it, the next thing you know, you're going to be affirming it either by what you say or how you act or by your silence. Folks, if you're feeling the way Lot felt, you are in good company. Lot felt this. Noah felt this. Daniel felt this. Christ as a man felt this. And every born-again person, a righteous person, who desires to have honorable behavior in a corrupt world has felt this. And they will feel this till when? Folks, when will it finally go away? When you go to be with the Lord. And the worse culture gets, the worse this is going to be. Don't despise it. Rejoice that you're on the Lord's side. Let's pray.